welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thank you, sir. Very good to be here on this beautiful podcast day.
It's the same temperature as always on this podcast environment.
It's always kind of spacey in the podcast day.
It really is.
Yes, it is.
You just heard quite recently that Turner and Hooch is not getting picked up again, the show that you produce and direct on.
I know. What? I know. It's sad. We just officially last night. Yeah, Turner and Hooch on Disney Plus. We made 12 episodes last year. They decided to go a different direction. I mean, I think the reason I'm sad about that because if anybody has seen the show, it's a good show.
It's a good show.
It's good for adults and kids. And it's got a little something for everybody. It's funny. It's charming. It's heartwarming. Mm-hmm. The dogs are awesome.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that it got canceled is, you know, when there's an executive change at a company, like the head of the CEO or whatever, you know, they want to do their own thing. They want to not follow the old regime's lead. That's happened at Disney recently. There's been a big upheaval with executives, and I'm guessing the reason that the show didn't get more episodes is that they just wanted to do something that was their development and their creative vision. But it's too bad because I feel like people really like the show.
I do know that people really like the show. Definitely. We've had a lot of people talk about that show. So my question to you is this: sometimes shows find another life elsewhere. Could they go to Netflix? Could they go to Hulu? Could they go somewhere else? Yes.
I don't think in this case, because it's a franchise, the Turner and Hooch movie with Tom Hanks was a Disney franchise. And I think
so it's already a Disney property.
Yeah.
It can't go elsewhere then.
I don't think so. I would be shocked on this one, you know. Original shows that, you know, are created from scratch sometimes do that, but I don't think something like this would, where it's a brand that Disney is so, you know, so tied to. I don't think so. It's too bad. It's sad.
It is. But you know what? It also, this is almost, it's not a life lesson, but it's definitely perspective wise. If you compare what we were able to do with Voyager, we lasted 7 years, which is eternity in Hollywood, it seems, you know, to be able to get a show that lasts that long, because Turner and Hooch was a good show. Mm-hmm. So in all estimations, it should have continued past. But then, of course, regime changes oftentimes mean certain shows, even though they're good, will get the axe. And that's what happened to Turner and Hooch.
Yeah.
That's a sad day.
Yeah.
Sad week.
It is. It's sad. And Josh Peck and Vanessa Lenges, Lindsay Fonseca, it just was a great cast. It was a really good cast. And too bad. Oh, well.
Yeah, it is too bad.
I guess I'll have more time to mountain bike.
You will.
I'm just going to have to go mountain biking more.
I'm just thinking about, we should all, you, me, and Picardo should mountain bike together. We should do it.
Yeah. And let him fall down and
that's why we need to go with him. He won't fall.
Yeah.
If we're with him, we'll help him. Yeah. All right. Are you ready to review or go watch this week's episode?
Yes. This week's episode is
Waking Moments.
Waking Moments.
Yes.
Interesting.
Waking Moments.
Okay. Yes, I am excited to go watch the next episode. Here we are, season 4. We're deep into it now. We're like halfway into season 4. I can't believe
episode 13. Okay, so let's go watch this episode.
Let's do. I'm excited about it.
Me too. And for our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Ravi and I are back from watching Waking Moments.
Yes, we are.
We're awake.
Wow.
Wow. You were kind of right on the money, actually.
I can't believe it.
What? But
where was was my nightmare of the, I guess that's not the episode. I had thought that maybe this was where, we got burned and
had
a makeup thing, but this was not it.
That's okay. But that did happen to you, but not in this episode. I liked it. I thought it was interesting.
I did too.
It kept me engaged. So let's just start off with our typical starting point, which is our poetry synopsis. So I will begin with my haiku and you will follow with your limerick.
Yes, I will with my limerick.
With your and Rebecca's limerick. Okay, here we go. So waking moments, haiku. The crew can't wake up. Chakotay works with doctor. Animazine. Yay!
That's funny.
Okay.
That's good.
I wrote that to make you laugh, actually. Yeah. But you know what? If I write Animazine, the injection stuff, then you're going to say, that's kind of funny. And you did. So.
And I did. I like that you got yay in there.
I got yay in there. Yeah.
All right.
Because I was going to say, Animazine helps, but it's just so anticlimactic. You need something like yay.
Yeah. It's good. Okay. It was funny.
Great. All right.
Props on that. Okay, here we go with a limerick, the classic Delta Flyers limerick for waking moments.
Let's go.
When Tuvok shows up on the bridge, he is naked. The crew is asleep and their dreams are invaded. Chakotay goes down, aliens asleep on the ground. Now the crew is permanently awakened.
You started your limerick with the Tuvok naked one, which is interesting.
I had to get that out there quick.
Yes. Huh. Okay.
It is the high point of the episode.
Really? Are you gonna say that's the high point?
No. Okay. I was trying to make a double entendre of some sort, but it didn't really work.
Yes. Now, you know, I just have to say, starting off the very beginning of this, this is a very apropos episode to watch right now. And I'm going to be giving away how the sausage is made a little bit here, because we are recording this the day before Halloween. And it's a very spooky beginning to this episode. It's kind of like,
it is.
It's like a horror movie, really, especially with that dream sequence where Janeway walks in to the mess hall and sees all the desiccated bodies of the Starfleet crew members.
Mummies.
Yes. Mummified people with the
spider webs all over them. You're right. It's like a Halloween moment.
Very much so. I thought, wow, this episode comes at the perfect time.
It was good. Waking Moments was directed by Alex Singer.
Yes, it was.
We love Alex. And written by Andre Bormanis.
I didn't remember Andre Bormanis writing an episode.
I didn't either.
He is our science consultant.
Yep.
Right. He was also your science, or wasn't he the consultant?
He was on the Orville.
The Orville, right? Yep. He came on the set that day that I came to visit you, and he came to say hi to me there. But I don't recall him being the writer. It's not story by Andre Bormanis. It's written by him. He came up with the story and wrote the script as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
Yeah, very impressive. I didn't remember Andre writing a script. I wouldn't have remembered that off the top of my head. But once I saw that he had written this, I do remember back when we got the scripts and his name was on it, we were like, oh, I do remember all of us being a little excited. Like, oh, okay. he's gotten an episode. That's kind of cool. Like, we knew he was a part of the family, but you know, he was not someone who wrote episodes. That was not his normal day job.
Okay.
So, definitely not.
And so you remember us reacting 25 years ago, the same way we just reacted just now after realizing it was him. Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So good for Andre.
The first shot we see is in a hallway and Harry's walking down the hallway.
Look at the pep in my step.
You had a pep.
Megan was like, look at the swag that you, I mean, what was that? I was almost like a cartoon character just coming down the hallway like that. That's crazy.
You had pep in your step, a lot of confidence, a lot of self-esteem. Yeah. You're coming down the hall. And Seven pops in. Hey, she needs you really bad.
She needs me to go help out or check something out in the Jeffries tube, right? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's strange.
Right when that scene comes on, Megan goes, is this where the elbow story took place? And are you familiar with that?
Yes.
So no, I don't think it is, because we start from position one and we walk all the way down the corridor when the elbow story happens. So this, in this entry, this opening scene, she sort of, you know, pops in off of a side, I don't know what that is, a side corridor where she sees me and comes up to me. So I don't think this is the elbow scene, but funny though that she brought that up.
Yeah. Okay. So Seven pops in and she needs you to help out in a Jeffrey's tube to take a look at something. Mm-hmm. And already my radar was up. I'm like, something's weird about this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you guys take off. You're like, okay, I'll come with you. And we go to Tuvok waking up and he was shirtless. I noticed that right away. And I was like, that's weird. Because I don't think we ever had seen Tim Russ shirtless before.
And that's something that I wrote down as well. Yes, Tuvok shirtless was shocking to me. I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember that. I mean,
no.
You know, where we're headed in a few minutes, I do remember. It makes sense
later. Yeah. There's a payoff eventually.
Exactly. But it made me think, you know, it was very rare that we saw our characters, the men topless, you know, without a shirt on, or it was just very rare. And so it definitely jumped out at me.
Do you recall ever in the 7 years of shooting where they asked you if you would take your shirt off in a scene?
No, I just remember that one costume that they put in my trailer. And I walked onto stage with the nice satin straps and the little velour camisole top. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like
you look like a beautiful debutante is what you
I really like did. I was like, that. I am not wearing this. Give me a t-shirt. I am not wearing this.
Yes.
It's the only time I cared. It just didn't feel like Tom.
Tom. No. Not in a million years, you know. No. And I already had a little bit of issue with your purple pajamas, but it's not as bad as that, you know, that thing that you almost wore, that wardrobe creation.
Yes.
I asked you that question because I do recall having a conversation with Robert Beltran during a specific episode where production says, we want you with your shirt off in this scene. And he said, no. And they said, okay. So they did not push the issue.
Insist on that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they gave him a tank top. So there you go.
Yeah. I don't think we were rarely asked, male or female, that I can recall to show skin. It just was not, an important part of storytelling, which to me was fine. I didn't feel like it needed to be for our show. So,
but when it comes to the men on the show, Tuvok maintained a good fighting weight the entire 7 years. Tim Russ did. I shouldn't say Tuvok. He really stayed in shape because this is the time, season four, this is about the time where we are all visiting craft service, grabbing a Kit Kat bar here, a Twix bar there, and that adds up. And so our weight is now fluctuating towards the plus side at this point, which is going to be a setup for a later episode where we see dialogue, which talks about our weight. It's coming up pretty soon.
They actually wrote it in. I do remember
they wrote
that.
It in. They wrote it in. They actually called, the writers called us out on it. So I do notice that, I mean, of all the characters to be shirtless, Tim Russ was the logical choice because he was in the best shape. And so
the women clearly all stayed in shape, honestly. It was just the guys.
Yeah, they didn't, like, just the guys.
Kate, it was
the
Kate guys. Stayed in great shape, and Jerry Ryan,
Roxanne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, the scene with him.
We liked our snacks, the boys.
Yes.
But Tim wakes up. Yeah. Tim Russ wakes up shirtless, and that jumped out. I mean, then we go to the mess hall, and Janeway comes in and says, computer lights on.
Yeah.
And no one's there. And so that's kind of creepy. And then we cut to a shuttle. Yeah. There's a lot of intercutting in this opening teaser sequence. They're going back and forth between all these stories. So we go to Janeway.
That's right.
Mess hall. Nobody's there.
That's right.
And then we go to Tom. He's in the shuttle.
Yeah.
And he says, I need a few more minutes to get all these readings.
Yeah.
And then we come back in the hall again. And there's Tuvok walking down the hall. But this is maybe the tightest close-up I have ever seen on our show. It was a close-up of Tuvok. He was walking down the hall, and it was a really tight close-up. And
an extreme close-up of Tuvok's face?
It surprised me because we never went that tight on close-ups. And it was a moving close-up of him walking down the hall. So clearly it was supposed to be a scary, you know, we're in a sequence that's supposed to be kind of scary and creepy and weird.
Yeah.
Then we go back to the mess hall and Neelix appears. And my first note here was, he's acting like a zombie. Like his performance is like, hello, Captain.
Yeah.
It was weird.
It wasn't weird. It was creepy. It was creepy. Horror movie creepy to me at that point, right?
Walk with me, Captain.
Yeah.
And then he walks over here, and then he says, he turns on the lights in the corner of the mess hall. And all of a sudden you get the scare reveal of the zombies, the crew members who have been mummified and spider webs.
Cobwebs hanging off of them. Yeah. They're dead, clearly.
And Janeway sort of gasps as she sees them. And then we go on to the bridge, and Tuvok walks onto the bridge and he's naked.
Yeah.
And everybody's there, but we're all sort of lounging in a very odd little grouping. Like we're all sort of
a weird clump
of us. And I remember filming this scene where he walks out naked and we all start laughing.
Yes.
I remember for multiple reasons. The first reason is, when you put us all in a scene like this, there were so many jokes flying back and forth that, like on the group shot, it was hard to get a take where nobody threw in some wisecrack or
a joke. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the other reason is, this is the scene where Tim came out and he had stuffed his pants or something. Didn't he try to crack us up?
Yeah, this is.
Were you in this?
This is the scene. Yeah, I was there. I'm watching.
You're in this
scene,
right?
I don't recall him doing this. And this story has been told over and over again.
Oh, he did. He came out.
But evidently, he came out. Wasn't he wearing skin colored tights for the bottoms? Like he wasn't really.
That's right.
So in those skin colored tights, he had placed a very large fake phallus, essentially.
He'd taken like a bunch of socks, a tube sock, and stuffed it with.
That's what I did in the pilot. I heard he actually had a real,
something.
Yeah, yeah, made a very large.
And he did it when he was behind the camera and he didn't tell anybody. And then he did it off camera. So we were all. I think in the cut is shots of us all laughing
at that.
I think that's one reason.
So it was a natural reaction. Then.
Yeah, I think
laughter was a natural reaction. Okay.
Tuvok realizes he's naked. We never see him below the waist, but the camera pulls back to reveal, he's naked from the waist up, and everybody's laughing. And and so he turns around and goes back in the turbo lift. And for the first time, we see one of these aliens.
That's right.
So clearly something weird is going on. He sees the alien. He reacts. And then we go to Janeway, who now is still standing by the zombies. And she looks over to Neelix, and behind Neelix is one of these aliens. So now we realize all these scenes have aliens creeping around close by. We go to Paris back in the turbo lift, and an alien rises up in outer space in front of the windshield of the shuttle that Paris is flying. And then we go to Harry. Oh, and I skipped over, by the way.
This is the second time, because Harry's kissing Seven, right? Seven goes, I don't really need help with work.
Yeah, and then you skipped over.
You skipped over that one part.
How could I skip over that?
How, Robbie?
After the Tuvok close-up, I skipped a note. Seven, yeah, you guys are in the Jeffries tube.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is staring hard at you.
Well, because I'm down there like looking at her work and looking at my tricorder, and I'm like, oh, your calculations are right. And she's giving me the eye. And then of course she starts kissing me. Now, what I don't recall, I remember the kissing scene, but basically it was a very long kissing scene, because we cut back again and the smooching is even longer. There's more of a prolonged, scene. I just remember the scene with one quick kiss, and then I see the alien. That's my memory.
Right.
But in this, in this intercut, there's a lot of, it's jumping back and forth. You see Harry kiss Seven, Seven kiss Harry, and then it cuts away. We see the other people. We see Tuvok. We see Janeway. And then it comes back, and there's even more kissing. And that's when she backs off, Harry just has this look of total contentment and bliss and excitement. And of course, that's when Harry sees the alien.
I was going to say, so we've seen Tuvok see the alien. We've seen Paris see the alien. We've seen Janeway see the alien.
Yeah.
We come back and Harry's still kissing. Yeah. And then she steps away and he's in bliss for a moment. He opens his eyes and then Harry screams. And I was like, everybody else has seen the same alien. Nobody screamed. Like, why is Harry the only one who's going, ah?
because he was in the midst of a beautiful moment with his dream girl.
I guess.
And
so.
She turns into an alien dude. And so that's why he screamed. And yeah, it's a loud scream.
It was a loud scream. I did notice that your kissing with Jeri Ryan was much quieter. It was not the loud kissing that Tom and B'Elanna have.
Well, there was some sound because Megan made a joke about that I was going, like in the first shot of me kissing, I made this weird sound. What did you say it was like, Megan? You said it was.
I said it was disgusting.
She said it was disgusting. Whatever sound that I made. Now that was literally the only time that Harry kisses Seven, or there's any intimacy, is in a dream sequence in an episode, right? Because there is
you can't even tell everybody about it later. When they ask you, like, what were you dreaming? You're like, never mind.
It was awkward. But this was also funny because this was, when this episode aired primetime, we were filming. We were in the midst of filming and Jeri Ryan was in her trailer with her young son, Alex, who was probably 5 maybe at the time, mm-hmm. I'm guessing. And this episode aired on her television in the trailer, and her son was watching the episode, and the kissing scene came up, and Jeri told me that he'd almost fallen asleep, because we talk about Voyager being so comforting that you can fall asleep to it.
Right.
He had almost fallen asleep and then that scene popped up and he sees me or my character and his mom kissing, and he quickly wakes up. He's like, "Mommy kiss Gowan," is what he said. He flipped out. He was like, "What?" Like this was a huge thing in the world of a 5-year-old to see his mother. I traumatized him because this is the first time he's seen another man kiss his mother. So so this was this scene has a lot of repercussions here.
Yes, it really. I had no idea. I had no idea. Okay,
let's move on.
So now we move on, and I think Harry gets the most dramatic wake up. I'll say that.
Yes.
Out of everybody. And the most dramatic reaction to the alien, that's what he gets. And then he wakes up.
I don't wake up. Remember? I'm like,
no, you don't. Yeah. No.
You have the most dramatic wake up. You're like, whoa, you sit up in your whole thing.
Pretty
right?
good. Yeah. I liked my wake up.
But what is your nightmare, really? You're in a shuttle and things are going. What's happening in your.
There's
what,
an what alien. And I guess the alien is out in space, and that should not, like, that wouldn't happen in real life.
So it was like William Shatner's Twilight Zone episode where he's on the plane and he looks out and sees the little gargoyle guy.
And
there
shouldn't be a gargoyle.
There shouldn't be
a
gargoyle. No. And there's a little gargoyle alien guy there. Okay.
So, all right. So the next scene is in Paris's quarters, and B'Elanna comes in and he wakes up and she's wondering, like, where have you been? We were supposed to meet for breakfast. And
yes.
And he's kind of, you know, he's overslept. And they basically talk about, we've got to, like, make plans to see each other. And they talk about, maybe Paris suggests, why don't we go skiing on the holiday tonight at St. Moritz? And she wants to go to Fiji or Samoa. So they're having a classic couples, like, I like the mountains, I like the beach.
Your hair is darker in this episode. Did you notice that?
It's also longer or something.
Yeah, it's longer, it's darker. And in this scene with Torres, this is the first time that we see her in that overcoat. Am I right?
She's pregnant.
She's
right?
preggers.
Yeah.
She's so pregnant.
She's pregnant. And I noticed it in one of the wide shots, but you don't see her in a wide shot except for one scene that I did catch for a moment.
Yeah.
But she's starting to show. Her pregnancy was starting to show. And so, and you can tell by the little overcoat with the tools and
the little
pocket.
Pens and little tools. Yes, exactly. So this was the overcoat on top of her Starfleet uniform that wardrobe came up with to basically hide her pregnant belly, right? And of course, the quickest way to hide a pregnant belly is never to shoot below, to keep that camera lens pointed at her face the entire time.
Yeah, close-ups only, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we start kissing, and I made a note, it was loud kissing again. Tom and B'Elanna can't quiet kiss. They just can't do it. But they make a plan for Friday night, which is kind of cute. And then we go to the mess hall and Paris is walking in very tired. His hair's still a mess. Asks for some coffee. And Neelix is like, maybe you should have some eggs or something healthy.
And then you snap at him.
I do. I snap at him.
You go, Neelix, you're kind of
mean. Give me coffee. And he hands me a cup of what I think is coffee. Mm-hmm. And then Paris starts to walk away and he sips it and he goes, and spits it back into the cup.
Yeah.
And then goes, Neelix, you gave me a steaming cup of cooking oil.
Can you imagine drinking
you need some sleep too. I don't know what was in it. It probably was coffee or something. I doubt it was cooking.
It was probably just water.
Water,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
you didn't. But we realized that he's tired. He hasn't slept well. Mm-hmm. Paris is obviously not sleeping well. And Neelix says maybe it was those three full moons that we just passed. So you start to get a sense that something's going on in this part of space.
Yeah.
We go to the bridge. Janeway comes in and she's tired. She talks to Chakotay. My favorite moment in this, she sits down and she said, yeah, I just couldn't sleep. And I've been having the weirdest dreams. And he goes, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And she looks at him with this like, you know, little mischievous smile. And she goes, yeah. Well, you tell me yours, I'll tell you mine.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
This was a JC moment, right? This here.
That's what I wrote down. Total JC moment. I was like, you show me yours, I'll show you mine. But Paris is kind of eavesdropping and he's like, he overhears this. By the way, Paris brings the coffee mug on the bridge. We see that in the background.
You look at you.
Never
so casual.
Brought a snack, a refreshment onto the bridge. But here I am walking in with a coffee mug. But we do realize in this bridge scene, they're all having nightmares. And then Janeway's like, where's Harry?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, he's not here. He's not answering his calls. So
the horror movie continues.
Janeway's like, come on, Tuvok. Let's go check on him. They get in the turbo lift. Mm-hmm. And there's a funny scene. This scene in the turbo lift with Janeway and Tuvok was very funny to me.
Oh, it's great. Oh, yeah.
She's like, oh, so you're having bad dreams too? And he's kind of like, yeah, I'm having some weird dreams. She's like, oh, what happened in your dream? Oh, it's just, I don't really want to talk about it. So funny.
Yeah.
It was really classic, was awkward, funny. He doesn't want to, he says something like, well, I went to the bridge, but then I had to go back to my quarters to get dressed.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't he talk about it being in the turbo lift and the alien follows him back? Does he talk about this in this point or not?
Yeah, maybe. I think so. Yeah.
Oh God. It was so funny.
And she's like, what do you mean get dressed? Weren't you already dressed?
Yeah.
Like, I prefer not to talk about it.
Talk about it. Yeah.
Prefer that you didn't ask or something.
Yes. Before the turbo lift on the bridge, Janeway talks about this is an alien that she has never seen this species before. Mm. And every time I see this species, I think of a prior episode where we already saw
it. Does
this
look
species.
Similar to this.
He looks like someone that we've encountered before.
But
or
I think the dinosaur head was a little higher, and I don't know. I'm sure they must have.
I feel like it's from the episode where, it's from the Saurian dinosaur episode, but it was when they were looking for us and they were at one of the trading outposts and they were talking with other, something like that, where they were talking with other aliens and you see other aliens in the background. I almost feel like this makeup was already used or something very similar to it. So, okay, that's my note. Continue.
So Janeway and Tuvok end up at Harry's quarters and ding dong and the door doesn't open. And so Tuvok, because he's security, he can just tell the computer, open this dang door.
He
opens the door.
Oh yeah.
And they go in and Harry's asleep. And Janeway says, Ensign Kim, and you don't move.
Yeah.
And then she sort of caresses your
caresses,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
She's like,
yes.
Ensign Kim. Like a sweet little mom sort of, come on, little baby.
I didn't read it as that. I didn't read it as sweet little mom. I read it as possibly like, oh, this is my boy toy on the side kind of touch. It was
a baby. Like she was doing.
Oh, you
like,
got that? Okay.
Like a little, oh, look at the little baby.
Look at the little baby. Look at little Ferris Bueller.
But it was an odd little caress, I thought.
It was. I wrote that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And he won't wake up. So
no,
she calls sick bay and they're going to bring Harry in, which we cut to next.
Yeah.
And the doctor basically kind of explains Harry's state. He's in a hyper REM state of sleep.
Yep. Deep sleep.
And they can't wake him up. Everything else seems to be normal though. There's no other, you know, symptoms in his checkup that says anything's wrong. It's just, he's totally asleep and we can't wake him up.
Yeah.
And the doctor suggests here, like, until we figure out what's going on, I suggest everybody stay awake. Don't fall asleep.
That's right.
It's like in a horror movie when they say, don't go in the house. And of course, the teenagers go in the house.
Because it's not just Harry who's in this hyper.
Oh, yes. There's
about
five total. Other people.
Six. Yeah. Five of the crew members are out cold. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we cut to the briefing room after this, and everybody's trying to figure out what's going on. And we learn here, six crew members can't wake up.
Yeah.
We're all sort of talking and assessing the situation. There's a shot of B'Elanna where Paris sort of pops in, almost like he was down below at her feet or something. Did you see that shot? I was like, I pop in, and I think I went back and looked at it. And I was like, oh, I kind of came from the side, I guess. But the way it's, the angle of the shot looks like what was I doing down by her knees or her feet? Because I sort of pop up and have a line. It was an odd little shot, I thought. It made me laugh. I watched it twice, two or three
times. Yeah. There is an implied dream that she went through too, right? But she never really talks about that. We don't know her dream. Uh-oh. We know. And then who else, isn't there someone else that doesn't? No, everyone falls to this. Every crew member, except Everybody for the doctor, does. Falls to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did notice in this scene in the briefing room that my skin color, my face makeup was much darker than normal. It almost looked orange. Completely. And then when my hands were, you know, crossed in front of me, you could see the difference in color between face and hands. And I know that that's something that we dealt with a lot on Voyager in lots of episodes for all of us, because they did use pretty strong makeup, not just on the prosthetic actors, but even on some of us. And the first thing that came to my mind in that scene where my face looked more orange is I thought, usually Tina did my makeup. Mm-hmm. Like for 7 years, Tina, one of our regular makeup artists, full-time makeup artists, did my makeup. But every now and then, depending on what was happening in the trailer, or if she was, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, if she was sick, now rarely someone else might do my makeup, because it's pretty easy, you know.
Yep.
You and I were pretty, very easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then my first thought was, I wonder if in this episode, some of these scenes I'm noticing darker and then lighter again, if there was some trade-off, like maybe Tina was doing something else.
Yep.
And I had to go have someone else do my makeup because it didn't look the same.
I think that's exactly what happened. And that happened to me once on the episode Nightingale, which we have not reviewed, but that was not my regular makeup artist.
Just a little detail, but it would happen on our show quite often. Not quite often, but you know, now and then.
Now and then, yeah. So, you didn't mention the police sketch that you guys are coming up with.
We're coming up with a sci-fi police sketch in there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, computer, extend the eyes 3 centimeters. And they're just, you know, change the color, darken the color. And we come up with basically a sci-fi version of a police sketch that looks just like these aliens. Everyone agrees. Chakotay now explains about a lucid dreaming technique that he uses. And maybe we can take control of these dreams. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, we could use the same technology that he uses for vision quests. So we've seen that before, this little piece of tech that he uses that's in his medicine bag. The other thing that came to mind in the scene, I feel like Robert had a lot of lines. And like I remember in this scene, he was struggling. It just all of a sudden I had a flashback of like, oh, I feel like Robert was getting frustrated in the scene because he had so many speeches and was struggling with his lines. And we kept having to like, okay, keep rolling, go back and do it again. And what's my line? What is it? You remember those days when he would sometimes he'd get frustrated and
get so mad.
He'd get really mad. I think this was one of those scenes.
Yeah, because it's the technobabble. This is not his preferred genre of acting at all. So he'd rather do Shakespeare, right?
Yeah.
So he got mad in this scene. I totally agree.
He had a lot of big speeches, and I think this was one where he was like, keep going. What is it? A lot of curse words in there.
Yes.
But in the end, Janeway says, okay, let's try this. And he says in this lucid dreaming, he taps his hand. And that's how he can bring himself out of the dream. He can
3 times. Yeah.
He'll have a visual aid to know that he's dreaming.
Which is the moon.
Which is the moon.
Yeah.
If he sees the moon, he knows he's dreaming, and then he will tap his hand and he'll wake himself up.
Right.
So he sort of sets up the rules here, what he's going to be doing. Mm-hmm. And then Janeway says, okay, you got to do it under the control of the doctor, though. Under the supervision.
Janeway says, I will agree to this, but we have to monitor this. This has to happen in sickbay. The doctor has to monitor you. We don't want to lose you, you know, like Harry. So
we go to sickbay, and the doc is getting him ready. And doc says, don't do this. You are going to, you know, I can't help you. Once you go in there, you are on your own. And Chakotay insists, I'm going to be fine. I can wake myself up. And the doctor's skeptical. But then Janeway walks over, leans down to Chakotay, and she says, "Ready?" And she looks at him with his eyes, "Pleasant dreams." This, oh my God. Oh my God. Like,
every really? JC shipper is like, ah.
Yeah. It was again. So. Yeah. Ready? Pleasant dreams. It was a moment not, for me. I had
oh my God. This is not how every captain speaks to their commander.
No, it's not. I don't think Patrick Stewart said to Frakes.
To Jonathan Frakes, yeah.
Number one.
Number one. Pleasant dreams. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready, Commander Riker? Mm. No, that never happened.
No, it would never happen.
But that's a funny image, though.
Yeah, it's very funny.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But he begins his vision quest dream, his lucid dreaming, and he finds himself in a hallway. Chakotay's walking down a hall, and he sees a deer. A deer runs by.
Yeah.
And he's got a spear.
He has a spear.
Yeah. So I guess that he's in control happens. Of what props he has in his dream, too. But
yeah,
I remember reading this, and I remember hearing them talk about it, but I didn't see them when they shot this. But that would have been cool to see a little baby deer on our stages. I don't know how they controlled that thing.
I'm sure
they were kind of herding it from one part of the hallway to another. Mm-hmm. Then Chakotay ends up chasing the deer into the mess hall. And then he looks out the window and he sees a big moon. So this is part of his lucid dreaming technique.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He knows he's in a dream. And then the deer appears in the mess hall and morphs this weird morph into this alien.
He does.
And by the way, whoever played that alien is super tall. Like, I noticed it immediately.
That would be Mark Coulson. That is the actor. Yes, I made a note there. And he also began his entire acting career on a soap opera.
Really?
Similar to yourself. You started on soaps, and a lot of other actors started on soaps. He did Days of Our Lives. So that's not the one you did, but he was on
Days of
Our Lives.
No, I did All My Children. I was on All My Children back in the crazy 80s. And then he was on Days of Our Lives. That was it. So All My Children, the soap I did, was a New York based soap.
Yes.
New York City. And then Days of Our Lives is a Los Angeles based soap. So he was doing that out there.
Yes. And then he ended up teaching over at Michigan State University as a film and theater professor there. So that was later in his career.
And he's tall. He's very tall.
He's very tall.
I noticed it on the morphing. And then, so now we go into a fight with Chakotay. And by the way, he morphs into the alien. It goes to commercial there. And then when it came back, there's this special shot down on the ground looking straight up like a huddle in a football game.
Yes. The two of them locked in combat. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to make a note here that, you know, what popped in my mind is, that's a special shot to transition into the next act, you know, from a commercial back into our story. Mm-hmm. And they probably just did that for that one moment so they could come in on the beginning of that act.
Yeah.
But that's something that as a director is very important to track. Like, what is my opening shot? How am I transitioning to the next scene? Mm-hmm. So I thought Alex Singer did a really nice job of opening that act with that combat sort of locked in, you know, arm in arm there from that low angle. It was just a nice special shot that was a good transition in. So
and it works because the moment right before we go to break, the alien knocks away the spear and then starts menacingly approaching Chakotay, and then we come back and they're already locked in that embrace.
Yeah. They have a brief fight. I didn't think it was the best fight. I got to be honest.
It was awkward.
It was an awkward fight.
And
because he was so tall. I mean, Robert Beltran is a strapping man himself, a specimen. But this was a very tall alien.
This was like a 6'4" receiver, wide receiver, going up against a 5'9" cornerback.
It didn't seem like they were well matched. And then when Chakotay does get the upper hand and sort of holding him from behind, it was an awkward shot because the alien seemed like a foot taller than Chakotay. And the alien was sort of looking sideways and was talking to him for a long time in this sort of locked moment. It looked like a prom picture with a short guy taking the tall girl out on a date. It was funny. But the alien says, look, you know, Chakotay says, you know, just let us go. Wake my people up.
Yeah.
And
he says, we didn't do anything to you, right? We've done nothing to you.
Yeah. What do you want?
Yeah.
And the alien says, you know, you try to destroy us in the unconscious, in our dreams. So we have to protect ourselves here. And he says, just leave our space. If you just leave, you know, the edge of our space, then your people will wake up. No big deal.
Yeah.
Just get out of here. So Chakotay says, you know, I will find you in the waking world if this isn't true. And so we sort of see this, you know, Chakotay seems to buy it, but he leaves a bit of a threat there. And then we go to sick bay. And he wakes up in sick bay. Chakotay he's tapped his hand there, and he wakes up and says, that was certainly one of the most interesting away missions I've ever been on. And then he says, I'll explain to you. Let's get to the bridge. I'll explain to you. And that's where we go to the bridge.
While they're having that conversation, I just want to say, I want to make note that the alien refers to the waking species, which is like, oh, wow. I mean, and he's kind of generalized all waking species, everyone in the waking species.
Which is pretty much every other alien we've ever met.
Every other alien race are, yes, in the waking
species. You guys are the weirdos that only seem to exist in sleep. Okay, let's be honest.
Yes.
And I love the line where Chakotay says, well, that was certainly one of the most interesting away missions I've ever been on.
Great line.
That was a funny, funny line.
Yeah.
And Janeway's like, you know, what happened? And Chakotay says, let's head to the bridge. I'll tell you about it. We got to get out of their space. Okay. So after he wakes up in sick bay, Chakotay heads back to the bridge and explains to Janeway that in the dream, he met this alien, talked with him, tells Janeway what's up. He says these aliens do have bodies somewhere, but that they communicate in their dreams. Mm-hmm. And Chakotay says something like, they're as real as the waking world. Like in the dreams, everything that happens in the dreams is as real as the waking world. And this guy told me, Janeway, he's like, he says, Captain, you know, if we just leave their part of space, leave their world, then we should all wake up. And this is where Chakotay brings up the Aboriginal mythology. And he says, it's like the Australian Aboriginals had a mythology where their ancestors dreamed the world into existence.
Correct.
And that's where he's kind of relating it to the Aboriginal mythology of dreams and consciousness and unconsciousness. I also, in this moment, was thinking about Carl Jung and his whole, universal unconscious theory, which is the foundation of Jungian therapy and analysis, that there is a true universal unconscious that we're all a part of. Mm-hmm. And so we may think we're awake and this is reality, but really the unconscious, the universal unconscious is really the true reality, sort of.
Who knew Carl Jung was a Borg?
Exactly.
And this is also the scene on the bridge where Janeway says, sometimes first contact is last contact. And that line in and of itself kind of cued me to like, Janeway would never say that. Like real Janeway would not say that.
So this is after the First Contact movie came out. I'm telling you, they were obsessed
with First
Paramount
Contact
Studios with the success. They were obsessed with the success of First Contact feature.
Okay.
I believe now.
Fair enough.
That's why Seven of Nine was created for our show. That's why the Borg came in. That's my first contact.
Okay.
This is last contact.
All right.
So that's what happens on the bridge. Mm-hmm. We leave the bridge and go back to sick bay. And Harry wakes up. We finally have left.
Yes.
We've left the
yes.
aliens space. We think everything's good. And Harry's
My note in this wake up scene was, I was very satisfied with my acting performance. Usually I'm very critical. I woke that sort of groggy Harry Kim kind of wake up scene was on the money. I'm going to give myself a good 10 out of 10 in terms of acting chops in this one scene.
I agree. I thought it was really well done. Honestly, it was funny, awkward, without being too over the top. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
And the Doctor and Seven, I thought were really like, confused about why are you so nervous of, you know, what's going on?
But perfect timing, because Seven's not there in the beginning. When the Doctor asked, tell me about your dream or tell me about your nightmare, I am being forthcoming.
I'm trying to tell him everything.
Yep. I'll spill the whole beans. And right when I'm about to give away everything, that's when she comes in, and it's sort of that over-the-shoulder shot.
Yeah.
She doesn't know anything about that. No.
She doesn't remember it. And then you feel funny about it. It was great. Yeah. The one note I made here is, as you get up and pass behind Seven, I noticed an extra in the background, somebody wearing like a pink uniform, or
what
was it, pajamas, in the sickbay scene. And maybe it's because there were six people who were sleeping. Maybe the idea
they were
was
in their pajamas. They're in
that they were in their pajamas, but it was like the weirdest pink. It looked like it had flowers up here. I don't know. It just was an odd, you know,
choice.
I feel like. It just caught my eye, and I was like, what is that pink uniform? What is, it's weird.
Are you okay with your purple nightgown or night pajama top? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, you're okay with it.
All right.
It didn't have the satin straps and all, but, you know, so I was a little disappointed, but.
Okay, good.
Anyway, we go to the mess hall. Go to the mess hall, and this is where Neelix is telling B'Elanna about his dream. And I love this dialogue. Neelix says to B'Elanna, the next thing I know, I'm being boiled alive in a pot of my own Leola root stew. And B'Elanna goes, talk about a nightmare. And he goes, well, it was perfectly seasoned. It was perfectly seasoned. I loved it. The writers just could not ever write a scene where they weren't making fun of his cooking.
No, but I'm just going to say kudos to Andre Bormanis for this scene that he wrote. Fabulous.
There's some great one-liners in this. Okay, so Harry comes in, and B'Elanna is like, oh, Harry, you're awake. Great to have you back. Tell us all about your dream, Harry. There's a little more awkward. Doesn't want to share. They say, who was in your dream? And he says, the woman of my dreams.
Yes.
Is all he will give. He won't say who it was, but he says, the woman of... And that smile you had, as you said, I'm going to keep the secret to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's a big hit. The ship gets a big hit.
But before the big hit is the best line of all.
Oh, what happened?
Right. Torres saying, yeah, I wonder what a Vulcan. I mean, we're all giving Tuvok crap in this scene. Yes, and then, you know, Harry's talking, laughing at Tuvok. And then Torres says, I wonder what a Vulcan nightmare would be like. And that's when you hear, that's when you hear Neelix say, alone, exiled on a planet where the only form of communication is laughter, which, again, Andre Bormanis.
Good job.
Funny lines. Now we're buffeted by alien ship fire, right?
Yep, big hit. You can feel the whole ship shake. We cut to the bridge, and the ship's under attack. I love this line on the bridge from Janeway. She says, you know, we seem to have a knack for provoking strangers these days. I thought, yeah, that's pretty much all Star Trek, but definitely season 4. We seem to just be like late season 3 into season 4. We're just provoking. We're like running up, you know, one after the other. We're just getting blown up by people. We haven't even said hello yet. No. And they're shooting.
We're not the USS Voyager. We're the USS Rub Them the Wrong Way.
Yes,
is what we are. Oh, my goodness.
And then the alien appears on our view screen, and he knows everybody's names. And he says, glad to see you're up and about.
Mm-hmm.
And Chakotay knows, you know, you lied to me.
Yep.
And suddenly some of these aliens are beaming aboard. They've taken over control of the ship.
Yeah.
And we can't.
They don't beam aboard. They just kind of,
they kind of appear.
They kind of come in like Q does, right? They just snap in, bling, like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so our crew is rounded up in Cargo Bay, and Tuvok, they're trying to figure out what to do. Tuvok suggests a diversion, and Seven goes, I've got an idea. She creates a diversion.
She grabbed me like I was a rag doll, but she pulls me off the ground and slams me on the ground.
Slams you to the ground.
And then she picks me up, straightens me up again.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
She goes, I'm creating a diversion. And then she punches you.
Remember what she said? She goes, Ensign Kim, you are the reason why we have been captured. And then smacks me across the face, which is probably the funniest scene that I've watched for Harry. I laughed my butt off, and I'm sure you did too.
It was very funny. She's getting all the hits in, and she's like, you should hit me back.
Yes.
And before you do, you get grabbed. So basically she got all the hits in. I wish that you could have gotten at least one hit in on Seven. I would like to have seen Harry and Seven go at it. I really would.
Yes.
But in this scene, Chakotay realizes that this is a dream.
Yeah, it's still a dream.
He realizes that it's a dream. He sees a reflection of a moon in a console. And so he taps his wrist, and suddenly we're back in sick bay, and he wakes up, and he's really awake.
We assume that he's really awake.
Yes, right? We assume he's really awake. And the doctor says, everybody's asleep. They all have these identical REM brainwave patterns, these neuro patterns. And they realize that everybody in the crew is dreaming the same dream at the same time. They're all in sync.
Yeah. And this is when we go to the bridge now, and Chakotay's there. Mm-hmm. And I love how he's like, excuse me, Tom. And he moves you over so gently.
Yeah, he slides my chair. I need to get to this console. And he slides my chair. And I wish I had some drool coming out of my mouth. I really did. It was Tom sleeping was funny. It was a funny bit.
It was.
The bridge. We go back to the cargo bay, and Tuvok is explaining this collective unconscious idea.
Seven brings it up, not Tuvok. Seven says it's collective unconsciousness. She's the one that actually brings that up. And the discussion begins, that the Borg have a conscious collectiveness. And now we are in the midst of a collective unconsciousness. So this
like is the reverse of the Borg.
Yeah, the reverse of the Borg.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I made a note here about the Jungian concept of collective unconscious or universal unconscious. So I thought I really found this whole concept to be cool. By the way, I want to just pause in the plot to say that one thing that I loved about this episode was that all of us are involved, because we talk about this all the time. My favorite episodes are the ones where it's not just about one character on some adventure, but it's really everybody has some investment and some connection. And so I just love this. So we're in there. Seven brings up the collective unconscious, and Tom is not there, but then he arrives, and he's so proud as he arrives in this moment that he opened the door. He comes over to the group and he goes, hey, I managed to open a Jeffrey's tube hatch.
Yeah.
And Janeway says, good work. Like, he opened a door. So I just want to pause.
Did you
and
feel
say,
like it was the teacher talking to the kindergarten kid?
Yeah, this is like weird? Okay. Yeah, this was like a little boy coming up. Hey, teacher, I opened the door.
Yeah.
And then she said, good boy. Good boy.
Good work, Tommy.
Good work, Tommy boy. So I think that's just an example of why Tom is a lieutenant. And Harry's not, because Tom can open a door.
These
special skills like door opening. Yeah, which I couldn't stop thinking about the rest of the episode. Of like, hey, I opened a door. Hey, guys.
Sorry. When you said special skills, I'm just imagining Liam Neeson going, I have a very special set of skills. Yes. I can open doors. I'm like, oh, okay.
Exactly.
Thanks.
So Janeway's like, good work. And she's got the plan. We're going to retake this ship. We end up in engineering. Yeah. And B'Elanna's talking about how they're using this harmonic inversion technology.
Yep.
And she thinks she can override it and turn back on the warp core, get power. And all of a sudden, there's a warp core breach starting.
Yep.
And everybody's got to get out of engineering. And then Janeway goes, you guys leave. Captain's orders. I'm staying.
Yeah. So Tuvok and Torres say, okay. And they leave.
They leave. And then there's a big explosion, obviously a warp core breach. They can't eject the warp core. It's not working.
Right.
The warp core explodes and the doors open and she walks out fine.
Yeah.
And she's like,
not even a hair out of place.
No, doesn't hurt her at all. So Janeway's like, we're still dreaming. This is not real.
Right.
Tuvok's really mad. Yeah, she realizes just then. Mm-hmm. And Tuvok's mad. He's like, you can't take chances like this. But they realize that they've got to wake up. And so we go back to the bridge and Janeway enters and Chakotay and the team, they enter. And then Chakotay looks up and he sees the moon. And he's like, dude.
That darn moon.
Yeah.
So there it is
tapping.
Again.
He starts tapping. Mm-hmm. But it's not working this time.
No.
It's not working. No. And
the doctor brings him out of it. Doctor, isn't that what happens?
Yeah, we cut into sick bay and the doctor has brought him out of it. And he realizes the tapping thing, the lucid dreaming is not working anymore. Mm-hmm. Doc says, maybe I can wake you up. You know, I can give you some medicine that will wake you up in the dream.
Is that the animazine? Animazine?
That's injection? The animazine. Yep, yeah, exactly. Or not even just wake him up, keep him alive.
Basically. Keep him awake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they devise a plan. Chakotay is going to go down to this planet. And he does. He beams down to our cave set, which is still painted white. It's been white for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
They painted the caves. Sometimes the caves were painted, you know, rock color. Sometimes they were painted ice color. Right now they're sort of ice color.
They're icy colored.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and because they figured out that because they were making this, you know, there's a huge debate, not a debate. There's a huge discussion of where are these aliens then? Well, they clearly have to be someplace where they're going to be not detectable by sensors. So underground, and that's where Chakotay goes to find
them. He goes underground, and he walks into the big opening, and there's hundreds, maybe thousands of sleeping aliens just laying on the ground.
Skinny sleeping aliens.
Skinny dinosaur type people laying down, taking a snooze. All of them asleep. And then there's some technology in here as well. And we cut back onto the ship and Janeway takes control of this dream at this point. And the alien, you know, she storms past the ace. She's like, you can't shoot me. And they shoot at her and it goes right through. And she's not afraid of them anymore because she goes, this is a dream. You can't hurt me.
Nope.
And she goes in to free everybody in the cargo bay. And then the alien boss man says, hey, you know, you may think that nothing's happening to you, but your waking bodies are dying as we speak.
Yeah.
And the longer we keep you in this dream, you're just going to starve to death because you're not taking in any nutrition and you're going to die.
You know who else would have made a great dream? Skinny alien, tall alien would have been Doug Jones. Doug Jones would have been perfect for this role.
This feels like Doug Jones. It really does. Yeah, but they can't stop it. And so we go back down to Chakotay and Doc's like, you got to take your medicine. But Chakotay's like, wait a minute, I got an idea. I can use this medicine to wake up these aliens and then get them to deactivate the generator. So I'm going to give them this medicine, Doc, but lock in a signal on my signal, on my comm badge, I guess, comm signal. And if you don't hear from me in 5 minutes, blow this place up. So
send a photon torpedo right to these coordinates.
Yeah. He's like, if I can't convince them to turn off this generator and wake everybody up, then you need to blow it up and I'll die with it.
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, no. And Chakotay says, that's an order.
Very heroic. Very heroic.
I'm a hero.
So he gives the injection to the one dude, right?
The one dude. And as the dude wakes up, we go back on the dream ship.
He disappears.
And so now the alien realizes,
Something's happening.
Somebody's waking up my people. Mm-hmm. They've figured something out.
Right.
And then as Chakotay gave the medicine, he was going 5, 4, 3, 2. And he drops his phaser.
Well, he does say something to that alien. He's like, turn off the machine, you know, turn off the thing that's transmitting their thoughts and what they're doing. And then then the guy's just shocked because he's awake. He has never been awake. Right.
Yeah.
So then now Chakotay is like,
and he passes out. Yeah. So now Chakotay, because he's fallen asleep on this planet.
Yeah.
He's in this dream.
Flashes into the dream.
He flashes into the dream. And he basically tells boss alien on the ship, in the dream ship, he goes, hey, if you don't turn that generator off in 5 minutes, I got a guy on the bridge. He's locked in. He's going to blow that generator up and all your people.
Yeah.
And we win anyway.
Yeah.
So
it's a game of chicken.
It's a game of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, I'll die, but we'll both die in our sleep, he says.
Yes. All right.
And so you see the guy thinking about it. And then we cut to jump later on. He wins. Chakotay wins. and everybody's all better, and they've got some insomnia. We're in the mess hall. We hear a captain's log, I think, over this, explaining that, you know, the crew's all back awake, but they're now it's the opposite problem. They were asleep.
Wasn't it the doctor's log?
Oh, maybe it was the doctor's log. Yeah. Yes, it was. It was the doctor's log. You're right.
Which we don't normally hear the doctor giving logs. So that was rare. Yeah.
Yeah. Medical log. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're in the mess hall and Neelix is there and he says he's terrified that he won't wake up. He can't sleep because he doesn't want to go back to sleep. Paris and Harry enter all sweaty. And by the way, nice legs, Garrett. Nice legs in those Star Trek shorts.
Why, thank you.
Yes, yes. We were playing three hoverball games to try to wear ourselves out to go to sleep, we say. But there you are in your space sneakers and your little shorty shorts.
And you're sweaty too. We're both in like, you know, workout gear, which you don't see that
which we don't see.
No.
Talking about the hoverball games that we played. It was interesting that all the boys were hanging out in that scene because it reminded me of our boys' nights out. In real life, when we used to go have steak dinners together.
Tuvok's wearing like, you know, like formal wear or something when he comes in. It's like
formal sleepwear.
Formal sleepwear.
Well, it's interesting too, because when he woke up in his dream, he didn't have a shirt.
He was shirtless.
But that's a dream. Dream world. Okay. Never mind.
It's true. Okay. He's very formal when he sleeps.
Yeah.
Formal underwear. Formal pajamas.
But we kind of end on this nice bonding moment of everybody kind of hanging out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mm-hmm. I really like this episode, I got to say.
1 to 10.
I would give this an 8. I would give this an 8. Yeah.
Okay. I will also give it an 8, but primarily because of Andre Bormanis.
Oh, Andre.
I really think he did a good job with this.
He did a great job.
So I'm very impressed. Very impressed with that.
Yeah. I thought this was a great episode. I really enjoyed it. Did you have a theme?
I didn't. I was going to wait for you to riff on it first because I'm a little
It's a hard one. I don't know that there's a theme or a lesson. What I wrote down is I felt like this episode was a reminder that our subconscious reality is as powerful as the real world and our
consciousness. I like that.
That just a reminder. It's not really a lesson, but it's a comparison of how powerful our unconscious is it's equal to our conscious experience. So
because I was just going to say a funny lesson, which was sleep is good unless you're traveling through dream alien territory.
Yes,
that's
a good lesson. And so, if you run into a bunch of evil dream aliens, drink some coffee and don't fall asleep.
Or don't sleep near an Australian Aboriginal tribe settlement. That's the other caveat there.
Exactly.
I couldn't figure one out. Yeah.
Well, that was really fun. I enjoyed that episode.
It was a fun episode. It was definitely a fun episode. And you know what? There's going to be some episodes where there really isn't going to be a lesson. It's just going to be a fun episode. And this may be one of those eps, right?
Okay. Yeah. But two thumbs up for me on this one.
You gave it an 8. I'm really impressed with you because usually you're around the 6.5, 7, maybe.
Yeah, I think our averages are 6 to 8, and you know, 8 would be on the high end. And I gave a 10 out of 10 not long
to
ago.
To Mortal Coil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 out of 10.
I could not believe when you did that. I was shocked. I thought you were joking with me.
You
were not joking. Nope. You were really 10 out of 10-ing with that. But 8 out of 10 is still very good for this episode.
Very good, yeah.
I might even get an 8.5. I might give it an 8.5 because of Andre again, because I'm so impressed with that. You know?
It was really good.
Because that's not
as well directed. It was, I thought Alex did some of his best work in here.
Yeah.
Everybody was good. Everybody was funny, which I love. I love when our show can have some humor in it and have some fun. And
this one had
tons of those little moments. I thought
it had those moments.
It was great. Yeah. Jerry was great. Mm-hmm. Doc was great. Beltran was great. Everybody was great.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Everyone did a good job. And there were funny moments, which is something that you and I both love. You love it as a director producer. I love it as an actor to see that as well. You know, have some humor. You need to have that.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for joining Robbie and I, and tune in next week when Robbie and I will be reviewing and talking and discussing and debating the episode Message in a Bottle.
Oh, mm-hmm. I think I have some thoughts about that one. We shall see.
Already?
I think maybe. I didn't know that was next week. Okay.
Message in a Bottle. MIB. Exciting. And not Men in Black, but Message in a Bottle. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. All right. Everybody, thanks so much. We'll see you next week.